Josh Bell hates everything.
That's right, including your movie.
Josh Bell hates everything.
Except me.
Hello and welcome to the Josh Bell Hates Everything podcast. I'm Josh Bell, contributing editor and film critic for Las Vegas Weekly, and joining me this week is Roger Eric Tinch, art and online director for the Cinevegas Film Festival. Thanks for joining me.
No problem. Thanks for having me, Josh.
Always a pleasure. So let's start this week with The Day the Earth Stood Still, the remake of the 1951 sci-fi classic about the Earth literally standing still. Someone, I think, at the screening we went to came out. Weren't you saying that?
Yeah.
The woman was confused as to whether the Earth actually stood still. So it's a metaphorical standing still, I think, in this movie. But Keanu Reeves plays Klaatu, the alien who comes to the Earth and deems it unworthy of... the Earth is worthy of existing, but
just
humanity.
Just not the people, yeah. Right. Just the people... on there.
And he has to wipe out humans, and in the original it was all about nuclear proliferation, about mutually assured destruction, and the human race needed to disarm in order for them to be worthy. And here it seems to be about the environment, although they're very coy about it. They never really specifically spell out what it is. It's just like,
no.
You are destroying yourselves.
Yeah, and it to me it seems to follow in like a line of films about the environment, but at the same time trying to be entertaining. The Happening,
right?
Being the most recent one.
It was a lot like The Happening.
War of the Worlds, to a certain extent, the Steven Spielberg remake, to a certain extent, was about the environment. I just did not enjoy the film at all. To me, speaking of past films, it seemed to rely on every single alien invasion cliche.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
I mean, even having Keanu Reeves in there, you kind of like, hit on the science fiction end too. But there's nothing really that I liked. Even the one of the main sort of character relationships you're supposed to be involved in is between Jennifer Connelly and Hayden Smith, Will Smith's son. But I thought that was just excruciating. Like, I did not believe that. That relationship.
It was very forced. I didn't find him, the kid, quite as annoying, I think, as you did.
I hated him. Maybe it's just me, but he just came off as a snot-nosed, sort of spoiled kid.
Right.
And I'm sure, to a certain extent, that's what he was supposed to be in the film, but I just kept thinking, because you're Will Smith's son, So, I mean, I was holding that against him. I don't know.
But, I mean, I think that's a big problem, because ultimately, the reason, I don't think this is like a huge spoiler or anything, but the reason that Keanu Reeves decides to spare humanity is because he sees the love between Jennifer Connelly, who plays a scientist who's called in to investigate, and Jaden Smith as her like stepson, which A, makes no sense, because it's not, he talks about humanity's capacity, we're totally giving away the whole movie, but who cares?
spoiler alert if it's not too late.
But he talks about humanity's capacity for change and how they can't change, and that's why he has to destroy humanity. But nobody changes.
No.
Nothing that he sees has any bearing on whether or not human beings can, save the planet and stop polluting or whatever it is that's supposed to be happening.
No, it's a very convoluted plot as far as, what Klaatu, I feel like an idiot saying that, what Klaatu is, there to do, and that is to... basically create these. I guess we just keep going with the spoilers.
Oh, why not?
I mean, and this is another cool thing too. I thought there was interesting ideas where they were creating, little mini arcs, Noah's arcs that would, grab different species and float them out into space.
They talk about that for like 2 seconds, and then it's completely gone. In fact, I completely had forgotten about it.
Oh, really?
You just mentioned it. Yeah, because it's so small.
Yeah, it just was an interesting idea. And, the other thing too, I think the best part about the film are some of the visuals that push these ideas even further.
Right.
So, I mean, there's great eye candy. It's just, there's not...
Yeah, and even some of the visuals are not... I feel like the Gort... The giant robot, which is probably the most the closest connection to the original. I mean, they make him look almost like a 50s sci-fi sort of giant clunky robot.
It's pretty much the same design. Yeah.
And at the same time, I think if it had been like a dude in a plastic suit, it might have looked better. It looked very fake to me.
It looks very CGI.
And I don't know. I mean, there were cool. Another cool thing is again, spoiling the whole movie. When they're going to destroy everything, there's these sort of like, I don't know what you call it, like nanobots or something.
Yeah.
These tiny little things that look like little flies that sort of multiply and they like eat through everything. And when those things first show up, it's really actually pretty creepy, I think. And that was like the only point in the movie I was like, wow, this is cool. This is good.
Yeah.
And there's a little measure of suspense to it, but just a tiny bit.
Yeah. No, I thought that was cool too. You know, there's some pretty good sequences with that. And you know, the other thing that I was kind of curious about was the rogue gallery of TV actors that seems like they're strung out through all.
There were a lot of familiar faces. Robert Nepper, Teabag from Prison Break.
Yeah.
The Curtis from 24.
John Hamm from
Mad Men. Yeah, who's great. And and all sorts of random. John Cleese shows up in like one scene.
Yeah.
And he helps to save humanity because he likes classical music and that really moves Klaatu. Which again makes no sense.
Yeah.
As if, or another scene where James Hong, the great character actor, shows up, and he's another alien who's been living with humanity for 70 years, and he says, "Oh, they're not worth saving." And Keanu Reeves goes and listens to some classical music and decides, "Oh, but they are." Like, James Hong never encountered classical music in 70 years, or the love between a parent and a child. I mean, it just. Things like small things that I think add up that if the movie worked on a macro level, you could forgive, but just all these little things that don't, you know, that don't work together, I think.
No, they don't. You know, I'll just keep coming back to, Mr. Smith Jr. You know, I think if he was a little bit more believable, I think there might have been a better chance for at least me as an audience member to really be involved with their plight and care if they survive or not.
You don't really care.
You know,
about
no, you really don't. And like the way that the ending comes about and how everything is I don't want to say solved, but the way that Klaatu does realize the world is saving is so thin. Like it doesn't really work. I didn't even really get a sense, I don't know if you did, if the audience liked it or not. It was a weird feeling I got.
It seemed like fairly unenthusiastic.
Yeah.
And we saw it in IMAX, which is, you know, supposed to be really impressive. And I thought the IMAX almost hurt it. Because there were a lot of moments where the picture looked almost like too blown up or something. And I don't know if that was the projection. But this is a movie, I think, that tries to be like a huge scale blockbuster, but shouldn't. And if you ever see the original, which is good, there's very, very little action or big special effects, even for the 50s. You know, it's much more cerebral and much more about Klaatu sort of trying to debate with people. And... you know, that might have been what this movie would have been better served as being. Obviously, you get Keanu Reeves and you get a huge budget and you have to make some big spectacular. But I don't think that was really the way to make this story. And actually, I was curious. And I after seeing this movie, I went and looked up a little thing that I had written on my blog at joshbellhateseverything.com when I had first seen this movie. And I actually mentioned how it might be cool to remake this nowadays because it would be interesting to see how it engaged with our current times. And apparently I was wrong about that.
No. And, you know, I when I was watching it too, I was like, you scale back some of the effects and it could be a Sci-Fi Channel movie, you know?
Yeah,
I mean,
which is not something you want to be thinking.
No, not at all. Because it as big as it feels like it wants to be, and I think the effects help drive it there, the story and the characters don't play into that at all. Like,
no.
It just doesn't fit.
No. So I think I would give this 2 stars out of 5.
Yeah, I'll get 1 star.
Ooh,
yeah.
All right. 1 star for poor little Jaden Smith.
Sorry, Jaden. And Jaden's going to be in the new Karate Kid. I don't know if you heard.
Oh, right.
So that's another reason for me to hate him.
Man, children of privilege, celebrity kids.
Will Smith, don't track me down, please. I'm sorry.
Sure, he doesn't care.
Don't take it personally.
Okay, so let's move on to a movie that I was very excited about that is opening just over the Village Square this week. And it's the kind of thing you wouldn't expect to be an art movie, but it is the latest Jean-Claude Van Damme vehicle titled JCVD, which is a sort of a meta story, I guess, about Van Damme himself, where he plays himself and ends up getting caught in the midst of a bank robbery. And the cops sort of mistake him for the perpetrator, and he has to, you know, in sort of typical Van Damme fashion, he has to find a way to get out of this situation and get the robbers, get the bad guys caught or whatever. But it doesn't play out like a typical Van Damme action movie. It's very much about Van Damme's sort of tortured soul.
Yeah.
And
it seems like a very artsy French
film. It is
film.
Very artsy. And it's in French.
Yeah. I mean, it's exactly what it is. It's an artsy French film with Jean-Claude Van Damme in it. And I the same thing with what you're saying. I really was looking forward to seeing how this film was going to be.
Right.
Because it's it seems like there's been quite a few reinventions as actors get older. Sure. Mickey Rourke and The Wrestler.
Oh, right. Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
So,
that's true. So, that's a big comeback.
Yeah. So this seemed like that for him. And I don't think it succeeds on the level of being entertaining, but I think it succeeds on the level of, you do sort of get a peek into Jean-Claude as a real
right.
guy.
That's true.
You know?
Right. That's true. But I think, like you're saying, it doesn't succeed at being a good movie.
No.
Which is, I mean,
it's important.
It is important. Yeah. Yes. I loved Jean-Claude Van Damme when I was a kid, you know, which is why I was excited about this, because I have the sort of nostalgic feelings going to like the drive-in and seeing him in Death Warrant or whatever, where he's kicking and punching his way out of prison or, you know, movies that were awful, I'm sure, but which I had a lot of fun with when I was younger. And I think throughout the movie, I felt like, you know, Van Damme is really, like, he's putting himself out there in a big way. I mean, a lot of the elements in the movie are based on his real life, like his custody battle for his daughter mm-hmm. and his struggles to get, like, decent roles, or he gets stuck in these movies that are filmed in Bulgaria and go straight to video and things like that. And there's a big monologue where they basically just stop the movie.
Which actually was my favorite part of the film.
Right.
And yeah, I'm sorry. And yeah. I think the film needed more. If it, like you're saying, kind of a meta biographical film, however you want to put it, but I think more moments like that probably would have made the film much more deeper. And but that was my favorite part of the film. I mean, he really let it all hang out, and you know, up until that point in the film, you know, he's acting. I mean, he's doing a great job.
He is he's doing a good job.
I've never seen him like this, and to see this 4 or 5 minute monologue totally uncut,
right,
where he's just talking to the camera. Is amazing. I mean, it's
He
should start doing stage plays. You know?
that is. But what I was thinking during that is that, like, assuming that monologue, say, is pretty close to his real feelings or things that are really going on in his life, like, he's obviously got a lot of, you know, he's done a lot of living, and he's been, you know, he's been through rehab, and he's had like 4 or 5 ex-wives. And I was thinking, like, this movie convinced me that he is an interesting guy.
Yep.
And I would have much rather seen like a documentary about him where I didn't have to be distracted by this like sort of pseudo Dog Day Afternoon plot with the bank robbers.
Which is completely uninteresting.
Right, right.
Yeah. And the structure of the story, to me, the way they played it out, where they basically, you'd get flashbacks from different aspects of depending on whose character's point of view it was, and you already know what's happening, so why are they giving us that same information a second time from a different angle? And actually, there was times where I was confused. Are we in present time, or are we in flashback mode in the bank? Like, so I think the structure hurt it, but it comes back to it being an artsy French film, I think. You know, they wanted to imbue it with some sense of style, you know?
Yeah, which is, I think, unfortunate. Although, I mean, there were a couple times where I thought the shooting style, I mean, there's the monologue, certainly, and then that big, like, single shot, like, action thing in the beginning, and, you know, a couple shots where he just, like, holds on Van Damme, you know, that I was like, you know, this guy has a good sense of the visual. But on the other hand, there's this sort of, like misty, like, hue that there's a whole, like, you know, Vaseline over the lens kind of thing that just didn't work at all.
And that was a real shortcut to add, I think, style to it, you know, where basically all the brights basically bloom.
Right.
It looked very music video-ish. I didn't mind it, and actually I think it's probably his slickest, best-looking film he's ever been in. I mean, it honestly looks great. But and I think that helps to sort of drive the sense of hyper-reality.
Sure,
you know, in the film. But yeah, I don't know. Ultimately, I guess it was just like style over substance to a certain extent. You know?
Yeah, it was, which is, I think, you know, what Van Damme has always fought against, strangely enough. But, you know, the other thing I wonder is that, like, they go through this movie and they kind of make the point that he's just, like, taking whatever he can get, and he's not really responsible. You know, they throw him in some action movie and he doesn't even necessarily read the script. And I wonder if this was another case where this weird arty French director was like, Jean-Claude, I have this idea and I'm going to put you in this movie and it's going to make everyone respect you. And he's just like, yeah, whatever. You know, I got some time before I have to go shoot my next crab fest in Bulgaria.
Yeah.
You know, I want to give Van Damme credit because, like you say, he does do like a really good job as an actor here. And I think it really helps that he gets to act mostly in French, because despite the fact that he's been doing American movies for 20 years or whatever, mm-hmm. he can't really speak English very well
No. And I think you do bring a good point on how genuine this film is, right? Because a lot of it relies on you believing the man behind the Van Damme.
Yeah.
And if... You know, if he's going to continue making crap films, you know, I mean, it's basically an antithesis to what he represents in this film, which he just wants the money. He doesn't care about
right,
the roles.
Right, right.
And I think you're right. I think it was just this director who, probably in a way to just gain quick notoriety for himself, sure. said, hey, I'm going to make a film about probably one of the most, you know, famous action stars in the last 20 years and kind of flip it. But how genuine is it, I guess, is the question
that I
come out after watching it, too.
Yeah, and I don't think you can necessarily tell, but it certainly succeeds in that people are talking about it.
Yeah.
It's the first Van Damme movie to get a theatrical release in the U.S., at least, in probably over 10 years. So that's a huge thing. It's gotten a lot of really good reviews. It played at film festivals. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's done a lot for Van Damme, but I remember thinking, like, you know, you wonder, like, well, what is he going to do with this now? And what has he said? He's going to make another Universal Soldier movie.
So. Yeah, Universal Soldier 3. I just saw that on his IMDb.
It doesn't seem like he's learned a lot from this experience necessarily, which in a way is sort of endearing because that's whole, like, the point of Van Damme, that he's a little clueless about everything and he just goes through his career stumbling from one thing to another.
Yeah, the muscles from Brussels.
Exactly. So as much as I wanted to give this movie 5 stars and say it was the best movie of the year because I love Van Damme, I think I could probably only give it about 2.5 stars.
I agree. It almost succeeded. It, you know, almost punctured the sort of layer you wanted to get to, but ultimately it didn't fulfill that.
Right, right. No, I agree. So, all right. And one other movie opening also over at Village Square this week is Dark Streets, which played at the CineVegas Film Festival. Mm-hmm. I think it premiered at CineVegas.
Yeah, world premiere at CineVegas.
So that's a really cool thing for CineVegas that it's now getting a sort of semi-wide release through a real distributor. And, you know, I saw this movie. Both of us saw the movie at the festival, which was, you know, a good 6 months ago. Mm-hmm. But I remember liking this movie at the time that I saw it. And I think I'm the only critic at this point who's given this movie a positive review.
Yeah.
So I will have to say it's a sort of noir musical, I guess you could call it, set in like the 30s. And I think it's supposed to be New Orleans, but it's almost a sort of like, you know, dream world.
Yeah, I would say like nightmare, dream world. Yeah.
Right.
That version of it.
It's not realistic, obviously. It's sort of, you know, hyper real. And it's got a sort of Chinatown-ish plot about a nightclub owner and whose father owns the electricity company. I'm trying to remember the details of the plot.
No, you're right. And the siphoning off the electricity that should be going to the city.
Yeah, something like that. So it's all about, and there's murder and intrigue and whatever. And I remember thinking that the plot doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And I don't think that's the point. I mean, in fact, most of the negative reviews I've read have sort of focused on the idea that this movie is all style and no substance. And I don't disagree with that. But I think the stylistic flourishes of this movie, I mean, there's a lot of great, like, cool blues music and a lot of, you know, great singers, Etta James and Dr. John and B.B. King, all these people who perform songs in the movie. And it looks really cool. It's very, you know, lavish and sumptuous, the set design and the costumes. And it gives you a mood, I think. So if you can let go of the need for the plot to, like, make sense.
Yeah. Yeah, then... no, I agree. I think, and maybe this is why you were probably one of the few critics to really enjoy it, was that you took it for, you know, what it presented itself as, which is just an atmospheric,
right,
you know, like, musical. And, you know, I don't know if you noticed, but in every shot there is a slow sort of, like, focus manipulation throughout the frame that kind of adds to that dreamlike stance. And I think on that level, from creating, you know, the musical numbers to, yeah, creating this world, you can just enjoy that sort of being in that and not really follow this really, like, sort of, you know, thin plot, then you're gonna enjoy it.
Yeah, I thought I had, you know, and I think part of it is that sort of festival fatigue, where I remember seeing this movie probably as like the fourth movie of a day, and who knows what else I saw earlier, but it could have been some really, really dreadful stuff.
Yeah.
And coming into this movie and being like, wow, well, you know, this director, she knows how to work the camera and, you know, construct a shot and, like, you know, put this movie together. And I was also really tired. And I remember definitely, I don't want to say I fell asleep during this movie, but I might not have been 100% awake.
Well, it's a slow, dark, you know, melancholy film. So yeah, I think if you're tired, it will probably do that to you.
Yeah, you know, it feels like a dream, and that was, it probably helped that I was near dreaming state anyway.
to be on the level.
As I was seeing it. So yeah, I think it's not going to be for everyone. And if you think it's some sort of like thriller where you're going to get a mystery solved, you're going to be dissatisfied with it.
Yeah.
But if you just like style, and especially if you like that kind of like New Orleans blues music, it's got a lot. And I think it actually has more than when we saw it at the festival, that they got more music in it.
It might have been, yeah. I haven't seen what the release that they're putting in the theater, but from what I've seen, it seems like the guest list has sort of expanded quite a bit.
Right. So that's cool. So maybe check that one out, you know, if you're slightly adventurous. So I would give it probably 3 stars.
Yeah.
I don't know. Perhaps you ought to abstain given the connection.
Yeah.
But yeah, check it out. It's an interesting one.
Definitely give it a try.
Right. So a couple things coming up on DVD that I know you haven't seen, but the biggest thing probably this week is Mamma Mia, the ABBA musical, which I did not care for, but made a lot of money. And I think they're talking about making a Mamma Mia 2, which is a little ridiculous.
And I think Meryl Streep might be getting an Oscar nomination.
Well, she did get a Golden Globe nomination for this. But the Golden Globes, you know, they have the division, the comedy slash musical category.
So it's an easier way to.
Right. So she got 2 Golden Globe nominations, in fact, one for this and one for Doubt, which is certainly not a comedy.
Depends on your sense of humor.
I guess that's true. Yeah, that comes out here on Christmas. But I wish they wouldn't make a Mamma Mia 2, because I will say the music, again, like sort of like Dark Streets, the music is very good. All these ABBA songs, they're classics. They're very catchy and fun. But not most of the people in this – Meryl Streep does okay, but a lot of people in this movie cannot sing. Listening to Pierce Brosnan belt out some ABBA song, it's very painful. And you can really see the strain that they go through to form a plot around these songs and sort of get the lyrics of the songs to fit this sort of random-ass weird story that they've concocted. And I think – I never saw it. I don't know if you ever saw it, like, here, the production they had.
Oh, yeah. I saw it twice, and I loved it.
Did you? Okay, yeah. And I have never seen the stage production, but watching the movie, I thought, I think I would have enjoyed this on stage, because you can get the sort of the scope of, like, big dance numbers and things like that, and it's more just, like, you know, sort of, like, half concert, half play. And
well, there's definitely people dancing in the aisles. I mean, the commercials are true. People dance in the aisles, and, you know, these are people that can sing, you know, the stage version. I think that helps a little bit.
I think it would. And the direction in this, although it was by the woman, I think, who directed it first on Broadway, she doesn't seem to know how to direct a movie. And a lot of these big dance numbers where I would really have loved a wide shot or two, you know, something to give you that whole scope. There's a lot of close-ups on hands and feet and faces, and it doesn't give you a sense of what's going on. So I don't know. You know, people loved it. I think if they saw the thing on stage, or they just love it. It's one of those comfort food kind of things. You know the songs or whatever. And I think the DVD probably has the sing-along, you know, bouncing ball and that stuff. They did that in the theaters. I'm sure you can do it on DVD.
Talk about torture.
Yeah. I missed that, thankfully. No one sang at the screening I went to. Actually, I was terrified, because at the beginning of the screening, the studio rep said, please, everyone, feel free to dance and sing. And I was like, oh, dear God, please nobody dance or sing. And thankfully, nobody did. But you can dance or sing along to it in the comfort of your own home. So don't check that out. But one movie I would recommend with slight reservations is The House Bunny, starring Anna Faris, which is, you know, a really stupid comedy, I would say. She plays a Playboy bunny who's not, you know, very smart, and is kicked out of the Playboy mansion for being too old, because she's like 27. And she ends up moving into a sorority house, becoming the house mother to these sort of misfit, nerdy sorority girls. And you can see where everything's going right from the get-go.
Yeah.
She's going to help them get makeovers, and they have to save the sorority. It's basically Revenge of the Nerds with hot chicks.
Yeah, and the chicks that are nerds are just almost hot, right?
Right.
Where one, you know, taking off their glasses, and they're instantly and then they're perfect.
And then they're played, of course, by, like, super hot actresses. I mean, Kat Dennings is in this, and Katherine McPhee from American Idol, and Emma Stone. All very, very, very good-looking women.
Yeah. So it's not based on any sense of reality.
Absolutely not. But Anna Faris is very, very charming and entertaining as the bunny. And it has some clever lines, and it's just a fun, like, entertaining movie. The two screenwriters, they wrote 10 Things I Hate About You and Legally Blonde, and a lot of these sort of, like, fun female-centered movies, which I think is great. I mean, this is one of the very few mainstream comedies where the lead is a woman, and she's funny. She's not just a love interest. She does a lot of physical comedy, a lot of clever humor, and, you know, if you like those sort of broad comedies, then I definitely think it's slightly a cut above, you know, the latest Adam Sandler picture. It's produced by Adam Sandler's production company, but
yeah, I definitely want to check out, because yeah, I'm a huge fan of Anna Faris, actually.
Yeah.
She, you know, ever since her appearances in Scream, I think she does, you know, she's sort of like the female version of Jim Carrey to a certain extent.
Right. I think she definitely could be, and
she's great.
Yeah. I hope she goes on to do some stuff, some more. So check that out. On DVD coming up on Tuesday. And also just randomly, the great folks at the Asylum who make all these the ripoff, Transmorphers and Snakes on a Train.
What was the War? They did a War of the Worlds one.
Yeah, well, it was just War of the Worlds because, of course, the original source material is in the public domain. So if you don't want to spend all your money on IMAX, you can see The Day the Earth Stopped from the Asylum.
Wow.
Coming out on Tuesday. I've seen a couple of their productions, and they're really, really awful, but probably not that much more awful than the actual Day the Earth Stood Still.
And you'll probably have more fun watching it.
You might. The last one I saw was Death Racers, starring the Insane Clown Posse. So that's the kind of thing you can...
I probably would have enjoyed that one better, more than the Death Race that came out.
So that's what you can expect. Yeah, and you know, give a chance to Dark Streets, and if you're a Van Damme fan, you might find some nostalgia value in JCVD, I think.
Either way, I think you're not going to be disappointed to the extent where you want your money back. I think it's a film that, you know, when you watch it, you learn a little bit about,
right,
you know, Jean-Claude Van Damme, and there's a little bit of action to boot, so
yeah, it
can't
has
go wrong.
It has,
you know,
ambition.
Yeah.
Doesn't always make it, but maybe worth checking out this week. So cool. Roger Eric Tinch, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Josh Bell.
And for Las Vegas Weekly, I'm Josh Bell. Tune in next week.
Josh Bell hates everything
except me.